This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Waiting to be joined by our friend Alan May. He should join us shortly to help break down the series as Carolina visits.
My guess is that he'll be very optimistic. He's usually pretty bullish.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yes.
He's not going to care what these analytics guys say.
He's not going to put too much stock in that.
Well, we went through all of the so-called experts, you know, the guys who cover hockey for ESPN and all those big names. Mark Messier took the Canes, but a lot of them took the Caps.
Yeah, but a lot of those guys aren't analytics guys.
True.
Right.
Yeah, they're just commentators.
Right.
Or former players.
Can the analytics people account for the fact that Tom Wilson, this is from RussianMachineNeverBreaks.com, Tom Wilson has a lucky egg in his locker stall and he's not moving it?
Okay, you can't account
for that. It's nestled up there with some of his athletic tape on the top shelf of his locker. Like, how do you put that into your analytics machine? What do you do with that?
We never got into this, but I had texted Drab that I wanted to, and I think we both forgot. So when he had that series-changing hit, right? I was of the opinion, and you know, I'm probably wrong, but I was of the opinion, man, that looked like a penalty to me, but obviously amazing, and I'm all for it. Somebody hit me to, he sent me a link, and I think it was from the TNT broadcast or wherever the hell it was, whatever the broadcast was. I don't know what that was on.
Well, it was obviously on Monumental, yeah. I think it was either True TV or TBS.
One of those.
Broadcast.
And he says, because if you've noticed, Willie, I don't think, has particularly from afar, changed his style. He's still a fierce hitting.
Nor should he.
Okay, but some people thought he should because he's getting so many suspensions. Mm-hmm. Like, adjust.
Yeah.
And apparently, and again, I'm not a sophisticated hockey guy, but apparently Willie, I guess, has told the league or they've told him or whatever. His deal is now he warns people when you're skating around in the game and you've got your head down, he's gonna say something before he hits you just to warn you he's coming. Like, because he doesn't want to be suspended either.
Yeah.
And so when you go and listen to the TBS clip, I'm not convinced it's Wilson, but the fan of the Caps who sent it to me said, that's Wilson. Right before the hit, you hear a guy, as they're skating, go, hey! Because the guy's head is down.
Right.
And he's about
trying to alert him.
He's trying to say, hey, get your head up, because I'm about to take you out, brother.
And so if he was,
a hint of a warning, and by him doing that, it's kind of like an agreement
makes,
with the league.
Makes it a legal
yeah,
hit.
Yeah, and it makes it to the more league.
Legal.
So, hey, don't
legaler.
Suspend me.
More legal.
I'm not taking a cheap shot. I'm even warning the guy.
I mean, it's a nice
because if he doesn't look and he gets pounded, he's probably going to the box.
Well, it's a nice courtesy of him
it's
to do.
It's a courtesy.
If yeah, he yeah. did that, it was nice of him to do it, but there's nothing within the rules that says he has to do that.
No,
he has
but
to
he's
give a guy
Tom
a heads
Wilson,
up.
Whose reputation has been held against him. In other words, I'm buying the theory that Willie is even warning these guys. I'm actually buying it. And
your warning should be Tom Wilson's on the ice, and you know how powerful he is. So don't skate with your head down.
Right.
You shouldn't have to be verbally warned when.
He's going the extra mile because he doesn't want to be suspended.
I understand.
Of course not.
And if you listen to the clip, you can actually hear right before he hits him, and I think it's Willie screaming, "Hey!" And then boom.
I wish we had that right now.
Yeah. Then he just brings the hammer.
But the thing is, you just can't tell who's saying it.
Right.
Yeah. It could be anybody.
It could be anybody. Yeah. But I
were they near the benches?
It was right near the sideboards.
It was near the wall.
I think it was opposite the benches, but I'm not. I'd have to look at the hit again.
My guess is that the guy who sent it to me is correct, and that it is Willie, and that he is trying to avoid suspension, but he doesn't want to take away his aggressiveness, right? So I thought it was an interesting point. So you guys can look for that.
Playoff hockey is just so
it's great.
Intense.
It's so riveting.
It really is.
I mean, you're just completely dialed in the whole time. At least I am.
Gives you a lot to look forward to because you know it's every 2 days. I believe this series is going to be played every 2 days. There might be one separation of 3 days, but you know, you got game one obviously tonight. You got game two Thursday night.
And yeah, the hit happened
and then
opposite
Saturday.
The benches. It was not. It was not near the wall where the benches were.
So it wouldn't
were.
Have been one of. It wouldn't have been one of their teammates.
I'm 99% sure it was Willie.
Yeah,
and he's just saying hey right before he pops him.
Yeah,
you know, and you know because he doesn't want to be suspended for being a physical player, is the theory, and I actually kind of buy it.
I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Well, you also shouldn't be suspended just for being a physical player, just because Tom Wilson's hits look more vicious and are more powerful doesn't mean he's committing a penalty.
I agree. But sometimes he has.
Sometimes he has, sure.
And so,
but that case, I mean, the refs were right there.
And
nobody raised their hand. Nobody blew a whistle.
Right. And it could be because they also recognize that he's you know, warning these guys. Get your head up.
Yeah. Which, again, he doesn't have to do.
He just...
Not necessary. That is a nice move, but
if
it is, it's a classy move by Willie before he destroys you.
Yeah, I wonder
you,
how many players
you.
Would actually do that.
I don't
know. Maybe when you've been on the brink of so many suspensions,
because
I do think his reputation. Is anybody going to argue that they were holding his reputation against him at times with some penalties and some suspensions?
No,
I think you're right.
So you got to adjust somehow, and that may be his adjustment. I don't know.
I just think he's a line teeterer, and we talked about
he
that.
He definitely
with that
is.
So sometimes it's going to go against you, and sometimes it's going to go in your favor. But
this listing of the Caps being the shortest, the longest odds to win, it's really starting to rankle me.
Which team do you think they definitively should be higher ranked than?
Well, how about the Winnipeg Jets? The Winnipeg Jets were 1.6 seconds away from going bye-bye. See you later, mate. Being pushed by an 8 seed that... They have a better chance of winning.
But didn't they have the best record in all of hockey?
They did.
Okay.
Well, but maybe
Caps, St.
But
Louis.
Maybe it's because
all the Caps did was dispatch the Canadiens in 5 games. They had one ugly one out of 5. Took care of business, and they're just getting... It's just disrespect.
But maybe it's because they assume that we have a much tougher shot in this round. And could lose
I'm sure
Carolina.
That's something that goes into it.
Yeah.
I haven't completely... I haven't crunched all these numbers... In
no,
my
but
super
I think
where,
line,
do they have
too.
The Winnipeg Pets?
Plus 1,000.
But where? Well, on the list.
What ranking?
They're 7th out of 8.
Winnipeg is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're ahead of the Caps.
Yep.
They're so the top two so points the top teams two. Are getting disrespected.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure you're not reading this in reverse?
No, that's what I saw too.
The Jets are plus 1,000 and the Caps are plus 1,100. The Dallas Stars have the shortest odds at plus 410. And the Carolina Hurricanes are plus 470. I don't like this list.
I do.
Again,
I don't
like it's just this is just a Vegas odds list.
Yeah, but usually they have some numbers behind what they put out there.
They're kind of just tossing out. They're clearly tossing out what the regular season numbers were.
Well, I think they're also factoring in everybody assuming Carolina is the favorite here. It could be harder for us to get out of it.
Right.
Yeah, there's some good-ass teams in the Eastern Conference. Those four teams are good.
But to be eighth in a vacuum seems outrageous.
Again, correct me if I'm wrong. I missed the part where the Carolina Hurricanes are now the Edmonton Oilers of the mid-80s with Wayne Gretzky, where they won, I think, five Stanley Cups. Or five in like 7 years. Maybe I'm missing that. Maybe I've missed this Hurricanes run of dominance where they've racked up a bunch of Stanley Cup wins. Because last time I checked, they had one, just like the Caps, and theirs was back in 2006.
Six, yes.
Well, that couldn't be less relevant.
And I believe they also went through, I know everybody's hyping up the fact that they've made seven straight playoff appearances. Why don't you look at what happened before those seven straight playoff appearances?
Yeah, I think they struggled.
8 or 9 seasons of missing the playoffs.
Miss.
But that's irrelevant.
Did you take any solace when Earl called in from Raleigh and he says the fans there and the radio folks down there they don't have that same confidence that the stats people have. So they're not like disrespecting.
Yeah, I don't think Carolina fans are like flexing their muscles at this point.
Right.
They're probably as surprised as we are that the Hurricanes are the favorite in the series.
Let's go to Evan in Richmond. Evan, what's up?
Hey, morning, boys. Love the show as always, and go Caps.
Thanks,
I got one quick tidbit. Cakes, I love you, buddy, but you got to stop calling Pierre-Luc Dubois Luke Dubois. It's like calling J.P. Flame Paul Flame. It's just not his name at all, buddy.
Hold on. I want to be correct. So if I'm doing something that's especially tilt-worthy, please set me on the correct
path.
What
is he saying incorrectly?
You call him Luke Dubois? You don't throw in the
Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah.
Luke Dubois.
He calls him.
You've been skipping the Pierre?
You've been skipping the Pierre.
Why are you anti-Pierre?
I don't know. So you
call him Doobie. You can call him PLD. You can't call him Luke Dubois.
That's not his name.
Now I need to figure this out. Is his name is his last name Dubois or Luke Dubois?
His
last name is Dubois. His first name is Pierre-Luc.
Okay.
Peter Luke.
So okay, that's where you're wrong.
So he's calling him.
So I'm wrong. I'm clearly
just
wrong.
Call him Doobie.
I can just call him Doobie.
Dubois. Just call
or
him
I'll just keep you know what? I'll just keep calling him Luke Dubois. You know what?
Just to piss this guy off.
That's my thing. It's my thing.
It's not just me, Cakesy. It's not just me.
Other people right, love are you, boys.
So Pierre-Luc is his first. So it's like saying John Paul.
Yeah, I did. I mean.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Love you guys.
Thank you.
I think this is the correct term. What do you think? I'm a Francophile? I know everything about French people and how their names work.
I did see that on Twitter.
I saw that on Twitter, because he was calling him
the wrong name.
I didn't really, now make sense.
But that's what makes sense. Yeah, Cakes thought Luke Dubois was the last name.
Yeah.
But it's John. It's
well,
like,
you know what?
I think you could change. Are you too stubborn to change?
Admit your fault.
I'm clearly wrong.
Just say, okay.
But it's kind of a good bit to stick with Luke Dubois.
Because
he's Pavlovian. That's why he calls him Martin St. Louis instead of Martin St. Louis.
Yeah, but that was on purpose.
I know, but.
Yeah, but I'm taking a life L by admitting defeat.
Are you
defeat.
Not allowed to take L's?
I mean, I try to take as few L's as possible, like most people. I like taking dubs. So I like getting curly dubs.
All right, so you just want to stick with this one.
Right? Yeah. I don't know. You know what? I'll reassess.
I think that you're a diehard Caps fan. For me, you're the biggest Caps fan that I know.
You know,
I think you would want to name him correctly.
I respect Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah.
I love what he's done for the team.
Pierre-Luc Dubois.
I'll just call him Doobie.
Yeah.
That's the easy.
Just call him Doobie. Yeah.
Doobie or PLD.
Yeah.
Either one works. I'm not trying to disrespect the guy, but I guess I was using his name incorrectly.
Yeah, you were trying to be disrespectful. You were just stupid.
On the Rude guest hotline right now, Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We find our guy, Bruce Boot.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
we've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drew, the former head coach here in the nation's capital with the Caps, who from 07 through 11-12 with the Young Guns was one of the more entertaining operations in the league. He was a part of many a postseason game here in D.C. and thereafter. Bruce, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good, Grant. How are you today?
Doing very well. We're at City Tap House with a bunch of listeners wearing red, getting ready to go over to Cap One Arena tonight. It's game one of round two for the Caps. We want to get your assessment on this matchup. The Hurricanes have become fairly heavy favorites, which we're surprised by, considering Washington had more points, more goals for and against this year, higher rankings in both. Why do you think Carolina is so favored in this series?
You know, it's really hard to tell. I just think the Caps are not respected for whatever reason. They're like the little... the redheaded stepchild. They've played much better than Carolina in the season. They won the season series, I believe. They've done so many things better than Carolina, yet Carolina's the pretty boy. Like, I mean, they got Brind'Amour behind the bench. They're fast. They're like the guys that never get their clothes dirty type thing. So they're the favorite. I think the Caps are going to get down and dirty with them, and I don't think Carolina is going to be able to meet their push. So, I mean, let them be the favorites all they want. I think the Caps have got the better team.
What's the most important thing for the Caps to do, Coach, to win tonight after this weird long layoff?
I think it's just to be physical. Don't let them skate. Don't let them freewheel. They want to play a rush kind of game. I think if the Caps are more structured, get it deep, and just finish checks, and don't give them any odd man rushes. I think that then they'll be successful. The biggest thing Carolina has going for it is in the playoffs anyway, their special teams were so good, 15 for 15 on the PK, and I think they scored 5 power play goals. If the Caps don't take penalties and they can get in at 5-5 game, I think they're the better team.
My guess for the answer of the question I'm about to ask you is just their speed, but I want your expertise and kind of more insight than that. The Hurricanes this year had more power play opportunities than anybody else. I think it was like 219 in the NHL, and then they had 19 in the playoffs in the first round, which was more than anybody else through 5 games. Why are they able to draw so many penalties? Because I'm with you, staying out of the box might be the key to the series. But when teams have played them, nobody's been able to avoid taking penalties. Why is that?
Well, they do have a speed game. They do play a simple game where they just they get it deep and everything else. Listen, if you want to put the analyst hat on, I think that's basically it. They go to the dirty areas. They don't retaliate as much. They're disciplined. If you want me to put on my fan's hat, I'm saying they cry all the time. And when things don't go good for them, you got Brind'Amour screaming behind the bench. You got the players crying on the ice, and I think they get extra calls from that. So, I mean, it would tick me off so much, or it does tick me off when I watch Carolina, and they get obvious penalties, or they get called on a penalty, and they're all crying from the bench, and I think it hampers them. But I mean, at the same time, I do believe that it's their speed and their work ethic. Because, I mean, if you outwork teams, and the one thing Carolina does do for the most part is outwork other teams, the other teams have to do something in the penalty department to stop you. And I think that's what they do. That's what they do best. But, I mean, if you play in their zone and you play and you don't let them get that speed game generated or that that rush chance game generated. I think you're much better suited to beat these guys. And I think, you know, when Logan Thompson's at his best, I think he's a better goalie than Freddie Anderson, who I had for 5 years and know him pretty well.
Coach Bruce Boudreau with us here on G&D. Coach, this layoff was such a weird thing for both teams. Obviously, Carolina clinched a week ago, Washington the day after. How would you have handled that as a coach with some of the uncertainty about when the game was going to end up being and then kind of the ramp up to try to get some guys rest, which is probably good, but to keep them sharp, which is what's needed?
Well, you know what? I think for the most part, they could both organizations are smart enough to probably guess when the series was going to start within a day. And you ramp it up like that. I mean, it's a combination. I mean, I've always believed that if you've got a week or more off, you have to have one tough practice in there. And just to make sure that you've kept the legs and the energy and the wind going in your body here. But I mean, time off, days of rest is so important at this stage. There's so many bumps and bruises on every athlete out there that, I mean, I think rest is going to be good, but one good practice and the rest of the practices you work on special teams. I mean, if you don't have the systems down by now, if you don't have all those things that you do down by now, then, you know, you're usually not in the second round. But by getting to the second round, I mean, now you start to look at the other team and say, okay, this is what they do really well. Let's practice on how we beat that and how we get away from that. And if you can do that, I think, and then it doesn't make it boring practicing every day. And you get more prepared, I think. But listen, both teams are going to be so excited to play and get this thing going. I assume that there might be a lot of mistakes in the first period and a lot of finishing checks in the first period, but I think they'll settle into a pretty solid game, and I'm sure the Caps will have a great game plan to how to beat Carolina.
Bruce Boudreau is with us multiple times, 50-plus wins in a regular season with the Capitals. Joining us here on Grant and Danny, we're at City Tap House. Stop by on your way to the arena to pregame with us on The Fan. You mentioned having Freddie Anderson. I mean, that would have obviously been his Ducks time way back at the beginning of his career, so maybe things have changed since then, but what's the book? Like, how do they beat him? What's the key?
Well, the key, you know what, when he can see the puck, he stops it. He's a big man. Like, I mean, 6'3", 230 pounds. I mean, I think you've got to get in his face, and I think you've got to make it tough in his crease. Like, I mean, if a guy's taking you in, if one of the Carolina defensemen are taking you into the net because you're going to the net, to me, you just keep going. Like, I mean, you're not going to get a penalty if they're pushing you in, but you got to make it tough for Freddie. If he can see everything, he usually stops it. So you get to that net, you make it tough on him. You know, he's not the greatest puck handler in the world, but he handles it pretty well. You make him handle a lot of pucks. You do all of those things to bug him. But the one thing about Freddie is if he does get hurt, he only plays if he's about 100%, if he is 100%. So, I mean, to me, getting in his face all night long is something the Caps do very well. They got the big forwards that can do that. I think that's going to be something that they're going to want to do.
Bruce Boudreau is with us on Grant and Danny. We're talking about Rod Brind'Amour working the officials a little bit and getting to work some of the alt casts with you over the years. We've told some fun stories about your time. Now, I've tried to tell Danny a couple of these stories about you and the officials that you said on air, Bruce, but would you mind regaling him with whatever length version of the tale you told me that involved an official in the playoffs and toilet paper?
Oh, yeah, you know what? Paul Dvorsky is my friend, and we both live in Hershey, and we both lived in Hershey that year. And not only did we live in Hershey, we were next door neighbors. So it was really ironic that he coached or he reffed Game 7 in the playoffs against us in Philadelphia, my first year coaching and in the NHL. And so, I mean, he called a penalty on John Erskine in the neutral zone in overtime in Game 7, and they ended up scoring a goal in that game or to win the series. And, I mean, he moved on to the next series. He was always a senior ref. I ended up in a few days coming home, and I just me and my wife said, okay, let's do something. So we went next door and we TP'd his whole house just so when he came home that he would have to do some work. So, I mean, we saw him come back home and we said, you know, this is about 4 days later. And we go, Jesus, you know, we got to go apologize to him. So I knocked on the door and I said, Paul, listen, you know, it's us. We've TP'd your house and everything. And he laughed about it. And I said, besides, I got to tell you, because you're the only guy with a pool in the neighborhood, I want to use it. I don't want you to be pissed off at me for the rest of the year. So we'll help you with it. But he became, you know, we're good friends still to this day. But it was something that, hey, not only did we do that, his son, who's his mother was living in another part of Hershey, he wouldn't come home to his dad's house for a week. He was so mad at him. So, I mean, I think all Caps fans were mad at Mr. Dvorsky at that moment.
I love the let's do something. And the something was TP your neighbor's house.
Got to do something.
I've said let's do something to many people many times, and that hasn't come up.
Well, it was either that or take the air out of his tires when he got home. I didn't think he'd appreciate that one. So,
Bruce Boudreau on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. What did you make of the Caps defensively in the Montreal series? They seem to be buttoned up. They allowed the fewest high danger chances in round one of any team, albeit only playing the five games, but they only gave up 24. Was that more about Montreal or Washington? And whose game did you like? Who's got to pick it up on the blue line?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I mean, let's face it, Montreal played hard, but their forwards are small. And the Caps, one of the things they do extremely well, very similar to the Toronto Maple Leafs, is they come back to the front of the net, they protect the front of the net, and they're much bigger than the opposition. So, I mean, consequently, they were getting nothing in the middle of the ice. And that's where I think, like, when the Caps, the first 50 games of the season, were one of the best. They were number one defensively in the league, I think, up to the first 55 games or something in the season. And that's what they got back to, was playing that solid defensive hockey, because for a while there, they were averaging, allowing 3+ goals a game. And I was a little worried about them coming into the playoff, but they seem to have fixed that. They've shored that up and they bring everybody back to the house. They block shots. They protect the front of the net. So you're not going to, you know, I mean, and Logan Thompson is going to be able to stop everything from the outside. So that's what they do. And it works. And consequently, it worked against Montreal.
Coach, give us a prediction for the series.
Well, I think it's going to be a tougher series than the one we just saw with Montreal, and it's going to be tougher than Carolina had with New Jersey. So I'm saying this is going to go 6 or 7. I'd like to see the Caps win it in 6. You never want to have to go to game 7 if you don't have to, and I've seen it happen way too many times before. So I'd like to see the Caps win it in 6.
Bruce, at home tonight, last change for Spencer Carberry. Obviously, the Caps are 3-0 at home in these playoffs. How big of a deal is that actually? Like, are you not able to get matchups that you want favorably on the road, or do we over-talk about it, do you think?
I mean, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But I think one of the things that Caps have 4 really good lines, okay? You look at the L.A. series with Edmonton, is where they only used 9 forwards. They had problems matching up because they didn't use their fourth line. The fourth line of the Caps, when you've got Dowd in the middle and Duhaime and whether it's Radish or whoever's on the other side, they can take every defensive face-off because they have faith, and Carbs has faith in them, and they're responsible. So that gives them a huge advantage. And like when you've got 4 lines that can play, the other thing you can do is you could put either that line or Dubois' line on the Aho line. So, I mean, either way, they're going to get the matchup they like. I think it's a good situation for the Caps, and that's what makes them good. They're well balanced. They're really good at that. So, those are reasons that you can match. You can play the matchup game if you have the guys to match it up. If you have only one, say, good checking line, and the other team is smart enough that has a that you they're matching up against you, then they put their first line out all the time, and you're putting your checking line out, and your better scorers are staying on the bench. That's what makes the advantage for Caps. When you can have at least two lines playing against their best line all night, it works out well, and it's an advantage for the Caps, whether you're at home or you can match up on the road like that as well.
Coach, great to catch up with you. Enjoy the series.
I'm going to. You guys, too. It'll be fun.
Should be great. Thank you, sir. That's Bruce Boudreau, terrific Caps coach over the years. Coached in many a playoff game, not just here, but in every stop. Got his teams to the postseason.
Carolina with a 1-0 series lead after dominating game one, but needing overtime to get it done. Game two tomorrow night back at Capital One. Last night on the call for ESPN was the terrific Sean McDonough with Ray Ferraro and Emily Kaplan, who is the on-ice interviewer and observer. She does a phenomenal job. I'm a big fan. Emily joins us right now. You can follow Emily on X on Twitter, at Emily M. Kaplan. So, admittedly, I don't know a lot about hockey until this time of year, Emily, when I watch it a lot, and I love playoff hockey. Was it as one-sided last night as it appeared to have been from the ice level?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on, Kevin, and it's so great to connect. Appreciate the kind words.
Yep.
Yes. Bottom line, yes, it was. You know, I've been around this Capitals team a lot, cover them a lot in the regular season. I was there pretty much the last 2 weeks of the regular season as Ovi was closing down on the record and through their whole first-round series as well. And this is a really well-coached team. It's just a great team with an identity and a lot of guys that play hard for a coach that always seems to have the right adjustments. And last night was the first night I can remember them just looking disjointed, like they just didn't have it. And, okay, like maybe there's this rust, there's a long layoff, the other team is dealing with it too, but the fact that it didn't get better over the game was just puzzling to me. You know, Spencer Carberry has gone out of his way to compliment the Montreal Canadiens, their first-round opponent, you know, of how valiant they were. But the truth is, and the coaches were saying this to me in the middle of the game, and I think this is what they're going to be talking about heading into Game 2, the Carolina Hurricanes are just a different beast. They are seasoned. They're ready for the playoffs. They apply a ton of pressure, and the Caps just need to make sure they're on their A game. And I think they'll make their adjustments, but it definitely was as lopsided as it looked in Game 1.
So the shot attempts, 94-34. I'm just curious, is that like unprecedented territory in terms of one-sidedness on a shot attempt stat line?
You know, it would be a bigger deal if the team they were playing wasn't the Carolina Hurricanes, because this is their MO. You know, sometimes they get a bit of slack for it in the hockey community because it's just shots, 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 shots all the time. And Spencer Carberry is like, we have a very similar system, but the biggest difference with the Capitals is shot selection over shot quantity. And so I think that this is often what you see with the Carolina Hurricanes. Critics of them will say, well, it kind of disguises. Maybe they're not as dominant as they look. It's just the way they play. At the same time, this is who they are. It's their identity. I also find them to be very well coached by Brindamore. They're very consistent. So I think that's the only reason I wouldn't raise a huge alarm, especially when we're talking about shot attempts.
So that's something they're known for. I'm curious, is that an analytics thing? Is that an analytics-driven number that Carolina's bought into?
Well, their general manager, Eric Tulsky, definitely comes from an analytics background. If you don't know about him, I would suggest you Google him. He has a fascinating way that he got into the hockey world. He's got a bunch of patents. He's a PhD. He's far smarter than any of us. But their coach, Rod Brindamore, is a guy that played in this league for a very long time and is all about effort. And he's known for his workout habits and being Rod the Bod. And I think his system, yes, he's bought into a bit of the analytics, and I think that's definitely analytics-based, but his philosophy is all about work and effort. And it's, you know, again, it's a very aggressive style. They're pressing you all the time. They're, you know, getting shot attempts all the time. And so I think it's a blend of both that creates the Carolina Hurricanes identity.
We're talking to Emily Kaplan from ESPN. So when you get a result like last night, and it's not totally unusual when one team dominates, but this sport is built for a goaltender to keep you in the game and for the results sometimes to go the opposite way of the team that's dominated. How good was Logan Thompson last night, and how good has he been in the postseason so far?
Yeah, he's been spectacular. I just think Logan Thompson, and really Charlie Lindgren, you know, kind of gets lost in this. He fell off a little bit at the end of the regular season, but they were so spectacular for the Caps all season long. Logan rose to a different level, though, to really take the starter's position. And he's just one of those guys that had an interesting path to get to the NHL. You know, wasn't necessarily a blue-chip prospect, but always worked his butt off. And a really fascinating guy to talk to all the time. And I think there was a lot of questions, right, because he missed a bit at the end of the regular season. They were saying it's upper body injury. I do believe it was a head injury. And then they name him as the game one starter coming in cold, and he was just fantastic in that game one, showed no signs of rust. And I think that they're really lucky that they have something special in Logan Thompson, a starter that they can ride out hopefully through a long playoff run. And if they have to turn to Charlie Lindgren, I think, no, they feel very confident in him too.
So in sports, in these series, sometimes these games are kind of one game entities and there's no carryover. It would be hard not to see some carryover after watching last night. But what do you think Spencer Carberry, the adjustments are? What are the adjustments the Caps have to make to ensure that the ice isn't tilted as much as it was last night?
Yeah, I mean, the words that they were using last night was hesitation. I think maybe it's just even a mindset of not letting the Canes dictate the play and saying, guys, like, we have a system too. And I think that the players, just for whatever reason, were overwhelmed. You saw an adjustment mid-game yesterday that I think you'll see continue for game two, which is Alexei Protas, who's been one of their best players all season long. He came back from a very serious skate cut injury. He was starting on the fourth line, but as the game progressed, you saw him get some looks in that top six and back on Ovi's line. And I'd expect him to start on, you know, with Strome and Ovi in game two. And then I'm trying to think of what other adjustments they're going to make. I honestly feel like it's just kind of like a mindset thing where, like, they came into this and maybe just taking things a little for granted, feeling good about the way things went with Montreal. And I think more so just, like, understanding that this is going to be a battle. And I know that these guys will, because it's just what they've done all season long. They've exceeded expectations. Every time everyone thinks they're going to fall off, they always find another level. But I think those are some of the things that you're going to see. Also, just trying to move the puck a bit quicker and up the ice. I think that was one thing that they just, again, the hesitation, like, it didn't look fresh. It didn't look crisp.
So what's it been like? You've been a part of covering a lot of these games this year because of the OV chasing down of Gretzky. What's it been like to be a part of that and to witness it up close?
Yeah, it's super special, and it's a privilege, something I don't take for granted. I really feel privileged just to get a glimpse into this team and why Ovechkin is so beloved in this league and what makes him, you know, just one of the enduring characters and, you know, hockey players of our time. I think he's a way better captain than people realize, the way that he leads by example. He sets the tone. He's also really goofy and he's funny and, you know, he's always keeping it light. It's a really special group of guys. I think they all realize that in preseason. They brought in a bunch of new players all in the early, you know, mid-20s age to try to make sure that they could, you know, retool on the fly. And they also seem to enjoy each other. So it's one of the more fun teams that I've been able to be around. And to be there as part of history is something that, you know, I'll remember for the rest of my career, because Wayne Gretzky's record is something people in hockey said was unattainable. No one ever thought that it would be broken. And for it to be broken by Alex Ovechkin and in a way that he did, I mean, I'm still speechless by it.
Do you think, like, last night was a bit jarring, I think, after the first round series against Montreal. And it's been a memorable season with the Ovi chase and the Caps unexpectedly having the season that they had as a team. Do you think they're in trouble in this series?
I don't think they're in trouble in this series because of the way they played in game one. I always thought this was going to be a 6 or 7 game series. I just think, they need to show up with their A game next game, point blank. I mean, if you lose 2 at home, that's when you've got the issue. You know, when you split at home, okay, like, that's common in Stanley Cup playoffs where parity is, you know, why we love it. And any team that gets in has a chance. And these are two really, really great programs. So I wouldn't, like, raise the alarms right now after a game one loss. But if you go down 0-2 and you have to head to Raleigh, which is a really difficult place to play, I would be concerned.
ESPN's Emily Kaplan joining us. You just said Carolina is a difficult place to play. You get to be front and center in some incredible sports environments. It's like every night when I flip it, whether it's Dallas or Winnipeg or Edmonton or Toronto in particular, and I know Montreal was off the charts for their 2 home games in the first round series. What is the most electric atmosphere in terms of home ice in the sport?
So I'm in Toronto right now, and this little dirty secret is I don't think it's Toronto at all. I think it's a very corporate crowd to get up for this national anthems, but they're known as kind of a late arriving crowd, especially between period breaks. Like, I wouldn't necessarily pick the Leafs, even though you might assume them, right, because of their long standing tough drought. I think most of the true fans are outside in the plaza, you know, cheering their butts off there. Winnipeg, I haven't had the privilege of going there in these playoffs. I have been there in the past for a whiteout, and that's just something cool. Like, that's just unreal. I didn't get to go to the two games in Montreal because Turner had those games. But being there for Four Nations at the Bell Center for those USA-Canada games and what the Capitals players were telling me, that was the best environment they had ever played in. It's just such a unique hockey market. They're so passionate, and that building, it just, I mean, obviously it's rich with history, but they get up, and the fact that it was on a Friday night, I think that city was rocked upside down. I'd have to pick Montreal for number one.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who went to game three, and he's a hockey fan. He says of all the sporting events he's ever been to, he's never been in a more electric, raucous environment, pregame in particular, than Montreal for that night. So I think a lot of people probably feel the same way. So you have this thing where at the end, your interviews, by the way, are phenomenal. I mean, you're so your brevity is incredible, but they're just great questions, and you're direct and to the point. It seems like the reaction to you is just really really great from players and coaches. But you do this thing where you say thank you at the end of interviews in the player or coach's native language. How many native language thank yous have you had to learn, or did you know a lot of them already?
You know, just being around the sport, it's such a multicultural sport. I mean, it's just a diverse sport in terms of, you know, a country. So Finnish, Swedish, Russian, Czech, I always mispronounce. My boyfriend gets on me all the time for it, and the guys never correct me. I'm always on David Pasternak, like, come on, like, let me get it right. French, and, you know, there's a couple other ones. I think for me, it's just a little sign of respect, and I think it's just a reminder to the viewer at home that what these guys are doing is really difficult when English is your second language and you're doing a live interview on television. And that's uncomfortable, and it's pretty brave and courageous. And so I think sometimes as viewers forget that, and it's just like a gentle reminder of like, hey, let's just like remember where this guy came from. Remember, you know, how hard he's working. And I think the players appreciate it too, because that's a part of their story that they're really proud of.
Is there one you haven't done yet? Is there a thank you haven't done yet?
Good question. You know what? I felt bad yesterday. Alexei Protas, he's Belarusian, and yep. I'm pretty sure you say thank you in Belarusian differently than you do in Russian. I just knew that he did speak Russian, so I went with my spasiba, and I know that works, but I got to practice that one too.
You do a great job. I know you got to rush off to the Toronto skate this morning. Good luck tonight. You'll be back in D.C. tomorrow night, right?
Oh, she sure will be. Yeah.
Thanks, Emily.
I guess the weekend's off, though. Couch my week this weekend. I look forward to that.
Oh, you get the weekend off. How does that work? There are games.
Yeah, it's the weird window of scheduling, I think, you know, with the two different NBA and NHL playoffs, ESPN and Turner. So Turner gets all the games Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And you know what? I really look forward to watching their coverage.
our friend Tariq El-Bashir actually is on the ice for some of those games for TNT.
No, we love Tariq. He does a great job.
Yeah, he does a great job. Keep up the good work. Really enjoy it. Thanks, Emily, for your time.
Appreciate you, Kevin.
Emily Kaplan, everybody, from ESPN, ABC. Caps and Canes tomorrow night, game two.
Let's head out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We're joined by our friend Joe Beninati, Capitals play-by-play voice for the Washington Capitals on Monumental Sports Network. Joe B., good morning. How are you?
Hey, Cakes. I was better about 24 hours ago.
Yeah. I'm doing okay.
Yeah. Hey, Joe B., I was watching the Caps pregame on Monumental yesterday. That was an awesome crowd out there out in front of the arena when you guys were on stage. Incredible.
Bish, you never have to worry about the fans here in D.C. You never do, and I know they'll be great again tomorrow in trying to help push their team back to get level in this series. But no, when we were out there, you know, the interaction that we have with them during commercial breaks or in the lead up to the show is kind of cool. And yesterday was an all hands on deck kind of show for us. So we had everybody out there, and the fans are begging to shake hands and take pictures and talk hockey and just wonderful. And then when the light comes on, they get loud. And I'm glad you guys could appreciate it, and we sure do appreciate them.
Joe, I'm not a good fan because I watched that game yesterday, and I was like, I don't know. This is like – sometimes it's just bad matchups. This, to me, screams bad matchup, and I know you can't say that after one game. I get it. I'm not stupid. I wasn't born yesterday. But that looks like a really bad matchup to me. We might be able to out-hit them in game two, but I don't know how we're going to be able to correct all the other things. Them having the puck forever. Them, I mean, they just fire pucks at people. That's what they do. Their penalty kill, which was number one going in, and I kind of I was like, okay, that's daunting. I've never seen a more atrocious power play than the last one that we had. To me, it seems overwhelming, and I know I'm a bad fan, but I'm just telling you what I think.
No, you're not a bad fan, and that's the first impression when you look at a game like that. But here's the deal. It's not as if it came unexpectedly, and to me, that means both coaching staff and player pool know what the countermeasures are to relieve some of this pressure. The word surrounding Carolina EB is pressure-packed everywhere, relentless, yeah. Every line,
yes.
Every D pair. Mm. So you know that that's going to happen. Can you use their pressure against them? Mm-hmm. Football analogy. It's like you're facing a zero blitz all the time.
Right. I got it.
Okay. Those zero blitzes are going to get home and they're going to do their thing, but how do you make them pay for doing that?
Right.
Now that's what we have to find out in the next 24 hours, 36 hours leading up to game time. And they've done it before. They've beaten Carolina before. They've seen it. Here's the crazy thing. A lot of what Carolina does and Washington does systemically, EB, is the same. They just have an extra gear, and it's called speed. It's called youth. Wherever you want to go, they are relentless in their approach, and that comes from Brind'Amour. And they've got some young Tigers who really turn it up. And the one thing I noticed, it's so different for me approaching a game that I'm not calling. When I'm literally watching it from the press box or seeing it from a luxury suite when we're in there talking to clients, all of a sudden you notice, wow, Carolina's defense, their back six in particular, and this is not to throw shade on Montreal. There's a reason why Carolina finished second in the East to Washington. Their defense is so good, bigger than Montreal's, more mobile even to some degree. Brent Burns at 40 years old can still really play. There are a lot of obstacles, EB, but there are ways to counteract those.
Joe, Logan Thompson was great last night. It's a crime that on ESPN they gave him second star of the game. They gave the first star to Jacob Slavin because he had the overtime game winner. Whatever. Logan Thompson was the reason the Caps were still in that game. My question is, how good was Frederik Andersen? Because we don't really know because the Caps only put 14 shots on net. I feel like you can take advantage of him, but not if you're only firing less than 15 shots on the cage.
Yeah, but Cakes, you're going to have to be really economic in this series. You're not going to have 20, 30 chances per game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to. Stylistically, they are able to. There's no team in the league, Cakes, Bish, EB, no team in the league that spends more time in the offensive end than Carolina. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they have the puck the whole time, but you constantly feel like the ice is tilted towards Logan. And how do you beat that? There are ways to beat that. They will figure that out. You're talking about Frederik Andersen, and there are a lot of people who think, oh, that's the weak link. Not necessarily. When Frederik is healthy, and that's the key, when he's healthy, he's awfully good. He has just been so beset by injuries for so many years, regardless of the city in which he's played, that he hasn't been around all that much. When he's on, he's a 6'5" threat. How do you beat him? You got to move him. And to me, there has to be more sustained pressure. Yes, I get it. The goal that they scored last night, the Caps scored with Protas off the rush, that is something that seems to creep up from time to time on Freddie, that if you can create 2-on-1s, if you can create 3-on-2s, yeah, Joe, that's with any goaltender. But statistically, you're seeing that maybe Andersen is susceptible there, but more than anything, he's a monster-sized individual who you have to make move. If you let him dig in, he's going to cut down angles. He's going to make saves. They've got to move him around in game two.
Joe B, you obviously called all of the regular season games against Carolina, and I was just kind of going through the box scores and the team stats in those games, and Carolina outshot, and I guess we're not surprised by this, they outshot the Caps in all of those games, even though the Caps won two of them. One of those losses was the 33 total penalties, where the Carolina Hurricanes had eight power plays. I mean, that was just a disaster, that game, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But how can the Caps, just based on those four regular season games and yesterday, I don't see the Caps outshooting the Canes.
They're not going to.
But what can they do to increase the puck possession in Carolina's zone? That's the big thing.
Right. So you'll hear the Caps in the next day and a half talking about having to out Carolina. So when you get the puck, first things first, you have to get out of the defensive zone. One reason why Washington was much better this season, their breakouts, it's moving the puck from defense to offense is a breakout of your zone. Carolina's forecheck is what's pressure packed and makes the defenders work harder to get the puck out. I'll use another football analogy. The Caps passing game was nowhere near up to par last night. They had difficulty stringing two and three passes together at a time at any stage in the game. Some of that's Carolina, some of that's Washington. The Caps will be sharper. Defensively, the six guys on the back end have to be better at finding passing lanes out of the zone. Again, I'll keep using quarterback football analogies. There are windows to move the puck. And here you go again, another quarterback analogy. Those blitzes are coming at you. So you don't have as much time. The reads have to be faster, cleaner, crisper. These are things that are going to get better as the series goes along. They have to, or else it'll be a quick series. In Carolina, in Raleigh, that proposes a totally different scenario because they're incredible on home ice. That's why game two now becomes a must.
Correct.
But for me, the shots question, Jason, it's always been, for the last, 15-plus years, go back to pre-cup time for the Capitals, it's quantity over quality. Brendan Moore just insists on everything goes to the net, guys. When we have the chance, everything goes to the net. Whereas I think a lot of skill teams sit there and go, okay, we don't favor the quantity as much as let's get quality chances and convert.
Right.
And that goes back to where I started with Cakes at the top of the discussion. The Caps have to be more efficient. You're not going to get very many chances. When you get them, you got to bury them. Conversely, Carolina's going to throw everything at Logan. There's going to be a lot of easy saves for Logan. There are going to be a lot of difficult saves for him. I thought in the first 30 minutes especially, I loved the way he was controlling pucks. He was, you know, everything was sticking to him. The glove was terrific. Thompson was fantastic. If you don't have Thompson last night, it's a 4 or 5 goal loss. But there are ways to sit there and just analytically parse through this and go, wow, they had 90 shot attempts. That shouldn't surprise anybody. That's what they do. How do you counteract that? The Caps will figure that out.
Joe, the highs and lows of Protas last night. You talked about his first career playoff goal to lead off the scoring, but then he had the terrible turnover where instead of clearing the puck up the ice, he turned it back in towards Logan. Alexiev mishandled it. He couldn't quite keep it on his stick blade, and it goes right to Stankoven, who has a wide-open shot. How bad did you feel for Protas in that spot, especially after you feel great for him for scoring that first goal for the Caps?
Yeah, I thought he was moving really well. I watched him all week, and he's moving much better than he did in the Game 5 of the Montreal series. I know he's going to be a factor. I have to pose this question to Spencer or others on the staff or throughout the dressing room. The Caps, again, when you are pressured in the defensive zone, more often than not, guys, the easy way out is along the boards. They take the boards away, so they feel like they force you to funnel to the middle. That pass from Protas is a tough catch for Alexiev in any stretch. And Alexiev is wearing a full face shield, which makes it sort of uncomfortable to see pucks at your feet. And this is the first time he's ever worn that as a professional. I asked him, it's ironic, I asked him yesterday, did you wear that in junior? No, it's a visor. It looks like a pro player would look in the junior ranks. So he's still getting and finding some comfort with that face mask. I'm not blaming that on this play, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of stress that's going to come if you keep breaking out the middle. And Protus forced that one to the middle, right in front of Logan. A lot of things can go wrong there, and that one blew up in their face.
So you already said that game two is a must win. I would agree. If they go down 0-2, going down to Raleigh, I think the series is over. You know, I'm not saying they'll get swept, but I think the series is over. Did that kind of surprise you, the way that Carolina completely dominated the game statistically, not by the score, but statistically? Did that surprise you?
No, Bish, they have it in them. Right. I understand why people – there are a lot of people who are giving Carolina the edge. The betting public, I'm sure, was giving Carolina the edge in this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yep.
I firmly believe this is a seven-game series.
Wow.
And I think that Washington will find a way to win game two, will find a way to split in Raleigh, and then you're going to have a best of three, and you're going to have home ice. I feel like Carolina – personnel-wise, definitely can beat Washington. That last night was a perfectly scripted, executed road game. Good on you. There's seven of them. Hopefully there's seven of them. And if the Caps play better, which I firmly expect that they will, and execute better and create some of, maybe it's just the expression is give Carolina some of its own medicine. Washington is the heavier team. The question is, can you make Carolina's six on defense go back, feed them to the glass, pressure them, make them feel like the quarterback in the pocket in the zero blitz? That's what we do. That's what the Capitals do when they're at their best. Now, they were out-executed last night, and that's what's on the table for everybody in the meeting rooms today, on the practice ice today. What is the counterbalance? What is the countermeasure to this? We've done it before, guys. We can do it again. We'll figure this out. We have to. Yeah, you don't want to lose two. You don't want to lose serve both times at home. Absolutely not. You have to go into Raleigh. In my mind, you need to go into Raleigh with a split and then go down there with the intentions of splitting with them. Oh, by the way, they won, I believe, 31 times at home in the regular season. Realize it's a totally different time. Tournament time is different, but it's not going to be a walk in the park in Raleigh. But I just think that this is split, and it's going to become a short series best of three. I sure cross my fingers and hope. Judging by what you saw last night, a lot of people will sit there and go, no, Carolina in five. Mm-hmm. I see it. I understand it. But I think you're going to see a much different, much better Washington team tomorrow.
I certainly hope so. Joby, thanks for the time. We miss you on the call, obviously, you and Locker. But it's good to hear your voice again. We'll talk to you again soon.
My pleasure, guys. Chins up.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, buddy. That's Joe Beninati, Caps play-by-play voice for Monumental Sports Network. Our Caps content brought to you by Ace Computers. Ace Computers proudly recommends Windows 11 Pro for the U.S. military. Made in America. Check out acecomputers.com.
Hall with 12 seconds left. Picked up now. They're chanting Thompson's initials into the closing moments. 5 seconds left. Puck out of the zone, and that is going to do it. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Carolina. We are all square heading to the Tar Heel State. Final score, Washington 3 and Carolina 1.
First voice you heard is that of one of the best in the business, one of the best ever do it, Sean McDonough, last night in D.C. again with Ray Ferraro and Emily Kaplan on the call of Washington's 3-1 Game 2 win to even up the series. It resumes tomorrow night in Raleigh against Carolina. Sean McDonough, nice enough to join us right now. You know, I've had you on the show before, not that I'm asking you to remember it, but you've always been one of my favorites. I think you're just incredible at what you do. And before we get to last night's game and this series, I've thought about this as it relates to you over the years. I don't think anybody has ever done four sports at the level that you've done them at. Maybe there are some people that I'm forgetting. You know, I don't think Al did, you know, I don't think Michaels or Summerall did hockey. I don't think Costas did. I could be wrong. But am I right that in terms of doing football, basketball, baseball, and hockey at a very high level that you are unique?
I guess, you know, I first of all, I really appreciate your kind comments, Kevin, and thanks for having me on. I guess, you know, I haven't really thought about it that much. I know some of the people you mentioned and some others who come to mind. You know, Marv Albert obviously did the Rangers for a long time, did NBC football, was best known for the basketball, but I don't think Marv ever did baseball.
Right.
You know, I think I can think of other people who probably did two or three at a national level, but I really don't know the answer to your question. You know, I just feel very fortunate because I love doing all the sports. It's really what I love about my situation at ESPN, the opportunity to do a lot of different things. And I get asked all the time, well, of all these sports you do, what's your favorite one? And I never have an answer because I really enjoy all of them. When I grew up knowing this is what I want to do for a living, you know, I was a all-around sports fan and kind of wanted to do exactly what I'm doing now.
Yeah, obviously with your father doing what he did for all those years. So how about not your favorite? Is there one that you think you do best?
I don't know. You know, I think if I had to say, I'd probably get the most positive feedback about college football. You know, the feedback about hockey tends to be I'm great or terrible and nobody seems to be in the middle.
Yeah.
That's not exactly true. That's an exaggeration. But, you know, what I like most now about my situation is, if you said what would be the two favorite things that you would do, I would say hockey and college football. And that's really exactly what I'm doing now. I'm doing the occasional other thing every now and then. I do a baseball game or a golf event. You know, I'm kind of disappointed that they moved the PGA Championship to May because, you know, I used to be able to do that in August with ESPN and our group, but now they've moved it to May. You know, it's in the middle of the hockey playoffs, so I don't get to do that anymore. But, I really feel blessed because the two things I enjoy the most, hockey and college football, are the things that I'm majoring in right now.
What do you think, for you, what's the hardest to do? What's the easiest to do?
I think hockey is the hardest, and in large part just because of the handicap, like last night there in Washington, of being really far away from the action. I mean, we're extremely high. I always tell friends of mine, you know, in most of these arenas, if you bought the worst seat, you know, it'd be the last row of the upper deck. Well, go up there and then look further up and further away from the ice, yeah. And that's where we are. So
yeah, I know where that press box is. You know, that's way up there.
Yeah, it's way up there. And, you know, it's really hard to be sure exactly where the puck is. You know, a lot of times it's difficult to tell the players apart, you know, like with Washington, you know, 80 Dubois and 88 Mangiapane, it looks a lot alike from up above. 22 and 27 look alike. So, you know, there's a hesitation where in some of these places you have a low booth. You know, I was envious watching Bob Wischusen last night in Vegas. You're about 20 rows off the ice. You feel like you can reach out and touch the players. You know, you're that close. So you really know where the puck is and if the shot hit the goalie's pad or if it just completely missed the net or if it grazed the post, where, you know, most of these arenas were so high and so far away, it's kind of an educated guess. And it really slows down your call. You know, when you're down low and you know what's happening, it just comes out much more crisply than it does. You know, I hate when I watch the tapes when we're really far away because there's just a slowness about the call that I wish wasn't there, but it's really a byproduct of just not being 100% sure all the time what's going on.
Well, do you, first of all, you said most places are really high up. So the Caps are not unique from that standpoint?
No. As a matter of fact, Carolina's worse. You know, Florida's really bad. Last year, and even this year, you may have noticed if you watched the game, we did a game at Florida in the Tampa Bay, Florida series, and ESPN, with the cooperation of the Panthers and the NHL, and we were there for the Stanley Cup final last year, they built us a lower booth, basically on a platform where they put some still photographers, and again about 15 or 20 rows off the ice, and the difference is incredible. Not just in, you know, how quickly you're able to identify everything and be sure of what you're seeing and what's actually happening, but the emotion of the crowd. You know, where we are, most of these places, you're really separated from the energy and the noise because you're just so far up in this sterile booth with a headset on. where when we were down there, I mean, you know, when Ray Ferraro was speaking after a couple of Florida goals, I couldn't hear a word he was saying in my headset because it was just so loud. You're enveloped by the noise. So I would say 2/3 to 3/4 of the TV booths around the NHL are very high, and there are a handful of low ones. Edmonton is low. Dallas is kind of in the middle, but it's really good. Montreal's awesome. Pittsburgh's really good. New Jersey. But most of them are far away. And unfortunately, the just two in this series are really far away.
Just out of curiosity, when you're in, and I know where that perch is, I mean, there's altitude. You almost need oxygen at Capital One where you sit and where the media sits. Do you call the action with binoculars, or do you sometimes go off the live feed in the monitor?
No, I don't do either one, you know, and I've tried both. It's just really hard to follow the puck for me through a pair of binoculars from that distance. And then you kind of get focused in too much on the puck, and you don't see things that would be out of the periphery of the binoculars, like, you know, the defenseman fell down or the goalie lost his stick or things like that. So I don't do that. I don't know. I've asked a lot of my colleagues, do you ever call it off the monitor? And I've never heard one person who says yes. Another part of that problem is the monitors aren't very big, so yeah, it's not much of a help. So it's just, you know, it's the nature of it. I just celebrate when we have a booth that's low. A part of me is cheering for that we'll have the Western Conference final if it's, you know, Edmonton or Vegas or Dallas or even Winnipeg, because all of those booths are low compared to the Eastern Conference final. All four of these are super high. Toronto is very high as well. As a matter of fact, when we did the All-Star game up in Toronto, I guess it was 2 years ago now, Burke Magnus, who's one of our bosses who basically runs now the production side of ESPN, came to the booth, and the first thing he said to me was, are all the booths this high? And I was like, no, but most of them, you know. And it was a good thing he came up there, because he was the one one of the people who signed off on us having the low booth for the Stanley Cup final last year in Florida, which was a huge difference maker.
We're talking to, of course, and you recognize the voice, Sean McDonough. You know, I mentioned, I think there's a uniqueness to the four sports that you've done at a very high level. I also think, and I've made this observation about you before as a fan on my show before, I think there's a uniqueness to your style from this perspective, and I'm wondering if you think it's fair. I think as a play-by-play guy, it's unique to inject opinion into the call, which I feel I get from you. Now, let me just say, I love it, and I think your opinions are super sharp in all of the sports that you do. I'm not an expert on hockey, so I have no idea if you're right or wrong. But do you feel that observation is fair, that maybe relative to other play-by-play guys, that you inject more opinion and analysis than a lot of other play-by-play guys do?
Yes, I do think it's fair, and I have always been that way, and I think it's a product. You mentioned my dad earlier. You know, I grew up the son of Will McDonough, who was a famous sports writer and the pioneer of the first newspaper man who made the transition into television as what Adam Schefter does now. And
right.
You know, when we were kids, we'd sit and I had two brothers, and, you know, we're all sports fans. My sister's sports fans, too. And, you know, we'd sit and watch games with my dad, and we wouldn't just stare blankly at the screen. I mean, he'd engage us in conversation about whatever it was, the officiating, the why do you think the coach went for that first down, or do you think he should have? So I think we were kind of taught to be analytical thinkers from an early age just by sitting there with him. And I've always said, Kevin, that I think my job, is to be talking about what the people at home are thinking about when they watch the game. You know, if I'm sitting in the booth and I think, wow, that's a really bad call, then chances are most of the people who are watching the game are thinking that too. So that's something that we should be talking about. And I don't think, you know, opinion just needs to be the domain of the analyst. You know, I think we're around these sports all the time. Hopefully we're educated enough that we would have an educated opinion. So that's really what I try to do, just talk about what I think the people, if they were sitting on their couch watching the game with us, what they'd be saying to each other as they were watching the game.
Yeah, I look, as somebody who is not asked to report on anything but to opine on everything, I actually don't mind that, and I think you do it really well. You know, there's been some discussion, as I'm sure there is with everything that you do, from fan bases. And you mentioned that in hockey you get probably as much, you know, constructive critique as you do with anything. Do you feel that you've gotten that from Caps fans in these first two games?
You know, if I have, I don't know, because I don't do social media.
Okay.
I don't have a Twitter account, Instagram, any of that stuff. I never have. I don't even try to look into it. So the only time I'm really aware of the feedback is if I see an article. You know, somebody set me up with this Google search thing, so whenever my name appears in an article, I get a link to it through Google. So, you know, I see, and some of them, they aren't all just mainstream articles. Some of them are, you know, websites that I've never heard of, or you've never heard of, like most people.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you can't. Right.
But what's interesting is they write articles based on five tweets from random people out there who may have six followers each, you know, and then it's, people are outraged, viewers are outraged that Sean McDonough's on this game, you know, and,
right.
And it's just funny because, you know, it's both ends of the spectrum. You know, the other night there was an article about the Colorado fans were upset that I was doing Game 7 because Bob Wischusen had done the series up till then. And then there was another article about Joe Buck had tweeted out that he was in awe of Kenny Albert and me and our talent because of the great job that we did in the Game 7s of the Dallas and Winnipeg series there on back-to-back nights. So, that's more meaningful to me. You know, if six people sitting in their basement want to tweet out something that I'm not any good, they're entitled to that opinion, and I'm 100% fine with it. You know, I tend to pay more attention to the Joe Bucks and the Marv Alberts and Bob Costas and Mike Breen's and people like that who have sent me very nice texts about hockey over the years saying they really enjoy it, you know. So that's important to me. I care about what people
should.
Are educated in the sport think, and
yeah.
The vast majority of the feedback that I've gotten within the sport has been extremely positive.
Well, as you should. And just to be completely open, I talked about this at the beginning because there was some, from Caps fans, some criticism that you were showing some sort of bias towards Carolina or anti to Washington. And I think that's a product of two things. One, we're just coming off the first round in which we get the hometown announcers. Now, Joe Beninati's as good as it gets. I'm sure you're very familiar with Joe and Craig Lachlan.
I've said that many times. I think
they're great.
Going to win the Foster Hewitt Award is, you know, and but going to the broadcasters part of the Hockey Hall of Fame, he's great.
He's great.
And, so
and then, you know,
and so is Smoke and Al Koken and the rest of their group.
Al's great. Alan May, Craig Lachlan. It's a phenomenal, you know, team that's been together for years. But I think the other part of it is the Caps were dominated in game one. The score didn't reflect that. And then in the first period last night, it felt like an extension.
More of the same. You know, we were on for a lot of those Montreal games, and I think if they watched our telecast instead of Joe and Locker, and they made a good choice to watch Joe and Locker, you know, they wouldn't have felt like we were biased. You know, if anything, when the home team does well, and you played the call of the John Carlson goal last night, I certainly yelled more loudly than I would have if the other team scored, because you're yelling over the home crowd. So.
Yeah,
you know, I also don't. It's another reason why I don't have social media, because I just don't pay any attention to that. I don't care who wins. I really don't, and I'd have no reason to be biased in favor of Carolina and against Washington. You know, I don't.
Especially since Carolina's positioning for you is even worse than Washington.
Yeah, it's even worse. And you know, and quite frankly, I mean, if you're going to say, well, what would you like to see going forward? You know, Carolina plays a style that doesn't always translate to very exciting TV. You know, they play that grinded out, low scoring defensive game. It's not an up and down game, you know, as we've seen in these first two games. So, I mean, if anything, you know, you'd want the team that has a better chance to go up and down to be successful. But I honestly don't care, you know, and it's just, yeah, your hometown announcers are going to be more skewed toward your home team when you watch them, because that's what they should be doing.
So let's talk about the state of the series, because through the first period last night, I think there was a lot of concern and worry. What happened in the final two periods, and how does that sort of carry over to game three?
Yeah, I think the concern was justified. I was concerned for Washington, too. You know, met with Spencer Carberry. We meet with both coaches before every game. And the first thing I said to him before last night's game was, well, how is this going to be different? You know, because if it's not different, the likelihood of them winning was pretty low. As you said, the score was close in game one, but if you watch the game, it really wasn't close territorially and that sort of thing. So, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, when he said, well, we can do basically what they did to us, which is get the puck in the offensive end and keep it in there. And it didn't, as you said, Kevin, it didn't start out that way. And then, you know, they kind of came around to it, especially in the second period. I mean, they had 11 shots on goal in the second period. They had 14 the entire first game. So, you know, they are capable of doing it. You know, they have guys who can go in on the forecheck and retrieve the puck and cause turnovers, and they did some of that last night. So I think it's a really even series. I think there are two teams that in many ways stylistically are similar. Both coaches have said that. And, you know, I think it's going to be a long series.
What do you think of this sport from this perspective? Because I do think your observations are always keen and sharp in that we could watch a game like Tuesday nights in which I'm not a hockey guy. And I came in here and said, I'm a sports fan. That was clearly a one-sided beatdown. And yet the score didn't reflect it. The Caps could have easily won that game. They were up 1-0 through, you know, half of the third period. What do you think about a sport which the results tend to be random, for the lack of a better description?
Yeah, I think that's sometimes the case. I mean, some teams that dominate the game win 6-1, too. So, you know, that happens. I think it's been a recurring theme with Carolina, right? This is the way they've played for 7 years now under Rod Brind'Amour. And I think he feels like they have to play that way because they don't necessarily have, you know, the guys who are going to carry the puck through the other team. And a lot of teams don't have those guys because there aren't that many of them. But he really believes this is the way they need to play offense. You know, get people in front of the net, get as many pucks toward the net as you can, and maybe you wind up like the winning goal in game one, Jacob Slavin. It wasn't pretty, but, you know, you keep throwing the puck at the net, and sooner or later some of those are going to go in. So, but you're right. You know, the premise of your question is spot on. You know, it can happen that one team seems to dominate territorially, piles up many more shots, but doesn't win. You know, it almost happened, as you said, in game one. And, you know, the other great equalizer in hockey is the goalie. I mean, you know, you could,
of course,
dominate. Logan Thompson obviously played really well in both games. But, you know, one team could dominate territorially in the shot totals. But if the goalie plays great for the other team, that's the great equalizer. And it's part of what makes hockey great, in my opinion.
Why do you think, and we're sitting here at 1-1, but even going back to before game one, why do you think the Caps, who ended up with the best record in the Eastern Conference, the second best record in the sport during the regular season, are shorted so much by odds makers, by so-called experts? You know, they were an underdog going into this series. They're still an underdog in this series. They're the last odds favorite to win the cup out of the eight teams, you know, remaining. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. And I assume that's determined by people who actually bet on these things. I don't know. I mean, I think part of it might be that they didn't finish the season well. Maybe that turned some people sour on them. Yeah, I thought that was really understandable. You know, they had a variety of reasons why I think they weren't very good at the end of the year. I think the Ovechkin thing, you know, took a lot of the attention and maybe took something out of them a little bit, at least in terms of the focus. I think they had their playoff spot secured so early that, you know, there wasn't the motivation to keep driving because we need to make the playoffs or we need to make sure we're the number one seed. You know, I think the injury to Protas at the end of the year was key, and it's key to their chances now that he's back because he was one of the best players in the league this year and, you know, on any team. When you talk about
right,
30 goals, 66 points, his size and speed, penalty killing ability, I mean, he was plus 40 in the regular season, which was third best in the league. He's a great player, and I give the Caps a lot of credit because, you know, a lot of teams, when they decide, well, we're going to turn over the roster a little bit, which they started to do a couple of years ago, you know, they tear it all down and then, you know, try to build it back up again. And that doesn't work. I mean, look at Chicago, look at Arizona, look at what San Jose is going through now. you know, it doesn't work. Or if it does, it takes a really long time. They had faith, you know, Brian McClellan, Chris Padrick, the coaches, they had faith in guys like McMichael and Protus, who were first-round picks. These guys are going to develop, and they're going to score more, and they're going to give us more. And they did. And, you know, I think that's been a huge part of the success of their team. And then some of the other additions they made, bringing in guys like Matt Roy has been a nice addition, and some others. Obviously, the trade for Dubois worked out well. But, you know, to answer your question, I don't know the answer, because when I look at their team, I think they're really solid in every area. I mean, we're seeing what Logan Thompson's capable of doing from a goaltending standpoint. He did it for most of the year. You know, they do have depth of scoring. I think, unlike Carolina, which annually struggles with, you know, oh gosh, we just don't have enough guys we can depend on to get us a goal if we really need it, which is why I was surprised they flipped Rantanen into Dallas. You know, Washington does. You know, they have three lines, even four lines. I mean, when you look at what a guy like Duhaime's been doing on the fourth line, that can give you scoring, and the defense corps can give you scoring, as we saw last night from Carlson. Yeah. And Chychrun's, you know, one of the best defensemen in the league from that standpoint. So I don't understand it. You know, I think they're one of the best teams in the league. They were the number one seed in the East for a reason. I think they have as good a chance as anybody to win the Stanley Cup.
Last one, and I appreciate the time. You know, this era of Alex Ovechkin in this town has produced one cup and one deep run. That's it. You know, 2018. And then we had, you know, a memorable season with him chasing down Gretzky this year. Do you think that he and, you know, basically everybody by extension in the organization needs another deep run for, you know, a much stronger legacy than just the 1 year of playoff success?
I don't think he does. You know, to me, he cemented himself as one of the greatest goal scorers of all time. Maybe the greatest, obviously. You know, he got two Gretzky in the same number of games, which was remarkable, really. I mean, it was so amazing to me that it was literally the same number of games. You know, his place is secure forever. I mean, he's one of the great players of all time. And I, you know, what I admire more the last few years, and you know, we've been back in the NHL for 4 years now at ABC and ESPN, and have done a bunch of Capitals games, and that he has done it while playing such a physical style, you know, being so eager to go hit people and been as durable as he's been. I mean, he missed the 17 games this year, 16 of them because of the broken leg. I'm still mad at Spencer Carberry for taking him out on that Saturday afternoon a few weeks ago at the end of the regular season. We had a Saturday afternoon game of the week, you may remember, in Columbus. And, you know, he had just gotten the record. And really the reason we scheduled that game, our programming people did, was that
you thought it was going to be it.
He does it.
Yeah.
But so he didn't play. So I said to Spencer in our meeting before the game, I'm taking back my vote for the Jack Adams Award because I just voted for you. But now I'm not sure I'm going to if you're not going to have Ovechkin in our game on national TV today. But no, I don't think he needs it.
I really appreciate this. You're incredible at what you do. Keep it up. I think you're off Washington, Carolina. I think TNT's got the next few games, and then you're back on it towards the end of the series.
A lot of NBA coming up. You know, we split the hockey and the NBA with TNT, so it's a nice partnership. They take over. We would be back if there's a game 6 and 7 in Carolina and Washington, and I think there will be at least a 6 because I don't see anybody winning 3 games in a row here. From this point on.
Thank you for doing this. Really appreciate the time. Take care.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks.
Sean McDonough, everybody. There you go. On the call of games 1 and 2. Yeah, the hockey arena setup for the announcers is usually not great. There's not a lot of room, you know, when it's played on ice and there aren't seats on the floor.
We are fired up to get on the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome in our friend, Mr. Brent Johnson, Monumental Sports Caps analyst, former Caps goalie. Johnny, what's up, buddy? How are you?
What's up, gentlemen? How you guys doing?
Dude, I'm going to say something to start. I kept waiting for you to come into the suite because I learn a lot when I watch hockey with you, and you guys stayed in the studio the whole night.
Yeah, I know. But it helped game one that we were out on F Street to come in and just kind of feel the vibe. Apparently, we're not doing the F Street thing until maybe game 7 or so if it goes that far.
Ah, got it. All right. How important was obviously getting the win, but perhaps bigger than that, just the Caps remembering to play their game.
I mean, it was, right? I mean, if you think back to last night, I think it's really important to remember that the defense of the Carolina Hurricanes, they really don't make very many miscues. They don't take many missteps out there. They're pretty steady. They make the smart plays. So you think back to Connor McMichael's first goal, and it's a break, right? It's a puck that shot, hits Gostisbehere in the face, and you take advantage of the miscue, but you have to execute. You have to. And that's just playoff hockey. When you get the opportunities, think back to game one, Ryan Leonard has the breakaway, doesn't really even get a shot off. It's things like that that come back to haunt you.
Yeah.
At least you make the goalie work, right? You have to make the goalie work and do something out there. So loved that they were able to capitalize off that, the first goal. And then another mistake they made was on their penalty kill. A team that was, I think, 19 for 19 in the playoffs up until John Carlson's goal last night. It's like one misstep, and the misstep is that they're sitting there and covering Alex Ovechkin, who's nowhere near the play, and that allows Tom Wilson, Dylan Strome to kind of execute a beautiful passing play over to John Carlson, who everybody forgot about. Mm-hmm. It's things like that that's going to get them over the hump.
That the Carly goal was just beautiful, dude. Like, he was so just nice. Wide open on the backside. They finally got the puck over there, and he drilled it. It happened right in front of where we were sitting. And
nice.
It was awesome, dude. How – I don't want to speak for Brian. When it was 2-0 and then it was 2-1 and the way Carolina controls possession, how nervous were you until that Willie empty netter? I was nervous.
Nervous, yes. I think that the Capitals weren't nervous. I think that you knew that there was going to be a push, whether that be at 1-0 or 2-0 late in the game, no matter what. It's going to be a tight series. This series could go seven, guys.
Yeah.
They are so evenly matched. And so just watching the kind of 4 or 5 minutes of the last period last night kind of unfold, things were getting a little bit tighter in the defensive zone, and they were getting a lot of shots and pucks to the net. But the Capitals did a fantastic job at allowing LT sight lines to the puck. They did a fantastic job of getting body position, inside body position on the forward or whoever was in front of the net at those key times. So if there was a loose puck, you know, you have to go in between the stick and the guy, and it's not easy to get those rebounds. So, it seemed like they were getting a lot of action and, you know, a deflection here or a bad bounce here. It could have been 2-2. But I think even though Carolina Hurricanes put that much pressure on them, I still think that they were in control. They played the game the way that you're supposed to play the game. You know there's going to be a push. You know there's goalies going to be pulled. You know all that stuff's going to happen. And you just got to do the little things right. If you get that opportunity to get the puck out, it's a second chance opportunities. You have to make good on them all the time.
Brent, Logan has played so well. I mean, what is it about him? Because he always seems to be right on balance and under control. Doesn't get like, you know.
I think that pretty much sums up his game, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's stated before that he likes to be one of those goaltenders who's very agile and can kind of go laterally really quick with that explosive power. But he also plays a game that's deeper and doesn't really – it doesn't really come to that where he has to move that, like, be explosive and be so lateral because he's so under control. I look at his game, and we kind of talked about it a little bit last night in our post game, is that he's kind of changed a little bit throughout the regular season and going into the playoffs. You could see him playing a much lower to the ice game, meaning
He's dropped his gloves down lower, which means that his crouch is deeper. And so to me, this is a goaltender that's playing percentages, right? If you beat me, it's going to have to be off of something, you know, extraordinary, where it'd be a deflection that's going wide or something, or it has to be a perfect shot. And if you can do that and make sure nothing gets through you in the process, then you're doing your game. You're helping your team win every time out there. The best part about his game, and I'll say this, even coaching kids, I think I say this from the first thing. Yes, obviously, number one is, hey, just go have fun with it, especially if you're a kid. But this, one of the other things that's right up there is just show me your battle. Show me your compete level. And I'm telling you, this guy, even though he's very humble in his press interviews, holy crap, is he a warrior? Yeah. Is he a battler? He doesn't want a BB to get by him out there. And when he does, he takes it, he accepts it, and keeps working. That, to me, that's just unbelievable character, a character you want in a goaltender. They, from goaltending standpoint, it's been absolutely beautiful to watch. Five games in Montreal, the one game in game three gets knocked out, gets hit in the head twice that game, gets kicked in the groin. Who knows what else happened to him that game. And, you know, he takes it on the chin, gets out of the net for a little bit, comes back even stronger in game four. And then they're able to clinch it at home and win. And he's been spot on, just like he was in the first round in games one and games two. Remember, they didn't really have a chance in game one. And here they are winning with 6 minutes left to go in the game. And that's all due to LT.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with our friend Brent Johnson here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. Give Johnny a follow if you'd like at JohnnyGoalie12. Of course, you can watch him on Monumental Sports Network, all pre and post, pregame, postgame, all sorts of coverage going down as the Caps Hurricanes series continues. You guys are probably on the air tomorrow at 5 o'clock, I'm guessing, ahead of the 6 o'clock puck drop.
Exactly. Yes.
So, Johnny, I got to ask you, LT's been outrageous, but last night, I don't think it was an accident. The Caps PR sent Logan Thompson and Tom Wilson to the podium together. What did you make of Willie's game last night, man?
Well, oh my God. I mean, everything we were writing down when we were watching the game was basically about Tom Wilson. And you're right. They put them in that post game presser together because they did that in the Montreal series, and it was quite, it just went off quite well. And I think Tom Wilson is one of the guys that obviously the leadership role he's taken, but it's that mantle being passed down to him. It was sort of in the making in 2018 where you're seeing this guy come up. He's scoring 20, 25 goals a year. He's getting better offensively, but he's also like, he's gaining that mindset of, well, this is probably going to be, I mean, I say my team, not my team, but I will take the major leadership role in this team at one point. And you can see that kind of that mantle being passed to him. And even if you listen to like Coach Carberry's presser after, and just how, you know, if there's an adjustment that needs to be made, it might be Willie, Tom Wilson, that goes to him and says, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? And I'll be honest with you guys, that doesn't happen from, a standpoint of a guy who's, you know, maybe in your bottom six or, your last D pairing or whatever. It's guys like that that have leadership. So he just showed by example out there how important it is to lead that way, sacrificing, working hard to get back to pucks, dislodging guys from the puck. We already know that he's been so physical and can be dominant that way with that,
Carrier hit last series. Things like that. It's just an onslaught. I'll be honest with you. If I'm the Carolina Hurricanes and I'm watching what Tom Wilson is doing, it's like I'm going to have nightmares because he was all over the ice when he was out there defensively, you know, chipping in offensively with the empty net goal and the unbelievable pass, things like that. It's just so good to see. And it's going to be even more important because they're going to go into this hostile environment. Everyone knows in Carolina, it's going to be so tough to hear, so tough to communicate on the ice, and especially the pressure that they put on you offensively. There's going to be no room for errors. You know, you're going to have to be very smart with pucks, and puck management has to be absolutely on point.
100%, because I noticed that in both games. Well, especially a little bit last night, but the first game a lot.
Turnovers on their own zone,
They weren't taking care of it very, very well in the first game, but they improved it last night.
Johnny, last one for me. You played 12 years in the NHL. Like you experienced a lot of coaches, a lot of different styles. Carberry seems to have something pretty damn special, and it's early in his NHL coaching career. But, you know, I think about some of the people that have cycled through the Caps' top coaching job, and Trotz was obviously really good, and that thing went sideways for weird reasons. But, like, Carberry seems like the best coach here for a long time, and he seems like the right fit for a long time.
Yeah, coaching is all dependent, right? Like, you can get sour on a head coach, you know, after winning the cup. Like, who doesn't take a coach that you have and you make a cup run and he's gone the next season? So they can sour on some players, and it's a very fine line where the coaches have to be strict, for lack of a better term, and they have to be malleable, like let the players kind of form their own, you know, cliques and everything and figure that out. I think Carberry is doing a great job of that right now, because if you start, you know, let's just say this. If you have guys that have bigger egos on your team, you have to know how to manage those egos, right? You have to know how to, like, whether or not you got to caress the ego or whatever you got to do. But you also have to be firm and steadfast with your decision making, whether it's, hey, we're practicing this day and, you know, I know you're tired or whatever, but we got to get out there. I think he's done a great job all season of managing that, managing egos, managing playing time and everything. And everyone on this team is going along with it just perfectly, right? Everyone knows their kind of role, their position. Last night in the third period, we didn't see Alex Ovechkin for 3 or 4 minutes. And that's right. That's the time to do that, right? We're on defense now. We want to make sure that puck's out of our zone and making the right play. So, and you don't hear Alex complaining. What's Alex most want? He wants the Stanley Cup. He wants to win. And the best way to do that is to listen to the coach that's got you here when they had no chance in hell last year to get to the playoffs, and everyone was calling them a lottery team this year. A rebuilding team, and here they are.
They rebuilt rather quickly.
Right? And a lot of different hands coming in, you know, PLD, Chychrun, Matt Roy, guys that just have chipped in and fit so perfectly.
Totally. And you're so right that Ovi being the special person he is really helps in that regard. Johnny, we'll all be watching tomorrow, man. Thanks so much for making time. I know you're slammed this time of year.
No, it's going to be a fun one tomorrow. Hopefully we can get a win and at least a split there in Carolina.
Let's get a split. Bring it on back home. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it, buddy.
Take care.
All right, see you guys.
All right. That is Brent Johnson. Make sure you're watching Monumental Sports Network for all of their pregame and postgame Caps coverage. They'll be on the air tomorrow at 5. If you want to listen to the game, you can listen to it right here, 6 o'clock. John Walton on the call.